This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another weekly podcast with Advantage Connors. I'm Jimmy, this time doing the introductions with my sidekick, Brett Connors. Brett, always good to be with you. We're back again. You're right. The days are getting longer, and it's my favorite time of year. What are your thoughts?
I love it. Yeah, I'm sitting here right now. It's still light out. We're recording this Thursday evening, dinner time, and it's pretty nice. Kind of got that bluish gray hue, you know, right after sunset when the sun's just about to dip and go bye-bye for the night.
So, you know, I like this time of year also, Brett. You know, you're not in a rush to go out and to really get your day going. You know, for me, I get up and I get going, and I like to get my exercise in, play tennis in the morning. But, you know, now you don't have to tee off. You can get 18 in if you tee off at, 2:30, 3 o'clock.
Right. That's the best part.
And I remember, you know, back, when I was still traveling a lot and you were younger and we'd pass through to see your grandma back in Belleville, Illinois. And we'd play and we'd be teeing off in the dark for the last couple holes. And I'll never forget those days. There was so much fun and, you know, really got us hooked into the golf. But daylight savings time, I wish they'd make a decision and just leave it alone.
Stick with it one way.
I don't know. I've been trying to figure out the benefit of it, you know, the changing of it, for the last number of years. I know one time it was big with the farmers, but hey, leave it alone. Keep the light up and let us get out and have more sunshine. I love this time of year.
One time it was
big.
What's on your mind?
What's on your mind? I haven't talked to you really. You've been busy, and I know Melina's gone back to see her family in Sweden, so mm-hmm. I haven't talked to you. What's on your mind?
One time it was big with the farmers. I like that line. it's me and Isabella. We're solo these few weeks. Melina's back in Sweden. I remember those days playing late into the night with Dini, Billy Riley, and a lot of other characters back that way. We would play nine. Remember, nine was a par three, about 155, maybe 145 yards, but it was over like a huge, chasm where like you took the, yep. you took the cart down the hill, and there was like a road that went in between the hole, the tee and the green. And so you could play that hole because you could tee off, and then you would just listen, even though it was so dark you couldn't see, you would listen and you could hear. Like if it hit green, it made one sound, and if it hit non-green, it made another sound. So
if you hit it in the woods, that made another sound.
That made the most sound.
That made the most sound. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun days. That really got us, you know, into golf and trying to, you know, figure out a way to get better and work on it a little bit, but. Yeah, it was fun days. We'd stop and
we'd go home and grandma would have dinner waiting for us. She'd either have fried chicken, shout out Hattie, who made the best fried chicken of all time, or a roast beef, or a full on ham, like a honey baked ham, right?
We weren't going hungry.
No,
we were well fed when we went there. We actually had to leave a little early so we could go back on our diet.
Right. The genius of her meals was that they were all good things for leftovers and sandwiches.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
We could just pick on them the whole time we were there.
Good days.
Yep.
Good days.
All right. Let's dive in. It's a pretty good show. I got some notes. I did some research. I'm excited to talk some of these topics tonight. First off, I think we should wrap up Indian Wells. Carlos going back to back, his first title since Wimbledon of last year, and Iga takes her takes it for the women, beating Sakkari, who had a pretty good run getting to the finals. But yeah, Carlos beat Medvedev. It was a rematch of last year. Medvedev just keeps making hard court finals. He either wins them or makes the finals. The dude is like a machine, but comes up a little short here to Carlos.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Carlos kind of got back into it. You know, I got a little criticism for saying a few things, you know, about Carlos. You know, why he wasn't winning. You know, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe he listened to our podcast and you know, kind of, you know, got on the stick and figured it out and you know, got back in the winner's circle, which is, you know, which is really good because, you know, with Sinner, Rune, Alcaraz, Medvedev, you know, that's a pretty good foursome coming up here now with the kind of matches that they're producing. And you're right, Brad, you know, Medvedev comes up a little short, but he's always there. And I mean, his game is, you know, obviously, you know, plays week to week, and goes out there and you know, is not afraid to, you know, to get, you know, in the mix week after week. And he plays a lot.
Yeah.
You know, to be in that kind of shape, I mean, you know, you'd think somewhere along the line that he might, you know, break down a little bit, but, you know, so far so good. I mean, he's holding up strong. His game's holding up strong and, you know, gets in there every week you know, he's a machine, you know, go for it.
Yep, hardcore specialist, self-proclaimed. It seems like he is kind of always there, and then he's playing whoever is, like, on a hot run at the time. So, like, Carlos all of a sudden kicks it into gear and starts playing some really good tennis. Medvedev's there, loses. Sinner, you know, breaks through in Australia. Medvedev's there. He was up, you know, two sets, had a chances, and, you know, he loses. Or, like, Djokovic here or this person there. Like, he's always running up against one of the best players, you know, maybe ever or at least at that moment. And, you know, he's fun to watch on hard courts. Like you said, you think the style he plays, he doesn't play quick points all the time. You know, he can grind and wear you down with, like, the best of them. You know, he can stay way back, takes the serve, you know, the return way back. Even though he tried to mix that up against Carlos, I think he was trying to stand up a little bit more, but, yeah, man, he's fun. He's one of the better characters. So when he's going deep in tournaments, it makes me want to watch more.
Yeah. But you know, what's good about it though, Brett, is, you know, he's losing to guys that are on a run, you know, and playing at the top of their game. You know, it happens to everybody where, you know, somebody sneaks up and, you know, and beats you or whatever. You know, but, you know, if he's getting to the finals, that means that he's given himself a chance week after week after week after week. And you know, doing that only, you know, if he keeps doing that, something good's going to happen. You know, that's the way I always felt. If I just kept giving myself chances to, you know, to be a part of it and to get in the mix and be a semifinalist or a finalist and. I mean, you know, if I lost in the finals, you know, still, I mean, you know, that wasn't satisfying, but still wasn't a bad week.
Right.
Yeah, you know,
it's like another swing. At least you got a swing. Getting to a final, it's like you almost get another chip.
Exactly. Exactly. And he does that. Yeah, you know, and he goes and he gets stuck in the next tournament too. He goes from California down to Florida and boom, right away, you know, he's back playing again. And, you know, whereas, you know, some guys say, you know, maybe I'll take a week off or, you know, take a break and you know, kind of recuperate and work on my game a little bit. You know, I like to ask him one time if he sees what he sees in the value of playing a week after week like that.
Yeah.
You know, is it the match play, the conditioning?
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's all of it, you know, maybe it's all of that, but, but boy, he gets stuck in all these tournaments and gives himself a shot. So, you know, well, good for him. I mean, you know, he's fun, you're right. He's fun to watch because, you know, I saw a little bit of the final where he tried to mix it up and move in a little bit, and tried to catch Alcaraz a little off guard with that, you know. But, you know, when guys are playing at the top of their game, they're ready for everything.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what you try to throw at them. And you know, but you know, good for Medvedev for trying something different.
Right. He's good like that. I think he's, he's a, like, he thinks his way through matches. Like, I think he's a good strategic guy. Like, he does try different things and I think the court too, like the fact he made another final in Indian Wells, everyone always talks how gritty and kind of slow for hard courts it is and the balls and everything. He's made finals back to back years. Last year he went down to Miami and won because those courts may be a little bit faster and benefited him. But you were saying he plays all the time. He hasn't actually been playing that much this year. He's only played three tournaments. He played Australian Open. He took a lot of shit leading up that he didn't play a warm-up event, you know, and they thought maybe that wouldn't be good for him. But then, you know, he had legs to make the finals. And you know, we talked about earlier, went five with Sinner won. You know, he played Dubai and then Indian Wells. He's just one of those guys where, like, he's fun. And maybe he plays, like, a lot of the hard courts because he knows that's his bread and butter. You know, like, he did have success. He won Rome last year, which was, you know, kind of crazy. Out of nowhere. So it'd be fun to see how he does backing up some of those points when we get there later in the year.
You made a couple of comments. He's fun to listen to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's not afraid to say stuff.
Yeah, he gives you good sound bites, and, you know, he's funny. He's like his relationship with his coach and them going back and forth on the court is always fun to watch. So,
well,
we'll see.
Another tournament coming up down in Miami.
Yep. A question for you before we move on from Indian Wells. We got this question from a listener, J-Rod, said, Jimmy, for the next pod, could you talk about the 1980 Indian Wells tournament that was canceled due to excessive rain? Interesting analog to this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's going back quite a few years, but Indian Wells was always a good event, you know, for me. I liked going down there. I liked playing down there, you know, but over the course of that week, you know, the rain was crazy. And, you know, we got to the semis you know, the skies opened up you know, they eventually had to cancel the tournament. I'm trying to think.
Mission Hills it was held at.
Yeah, it was in Mission Hills. But I'm trying to think. I know it was me and Teacher and Peter Fleming and
Gene Mayer.
Gene Mayer. Thanks.
Yep.
You know, that were left in the semis. And, you know, back then, you know, you played Palm Springs and then the next week you went, you know, right away to another tournament. So, you know, when the rain was socked in it rained so hard, it was flooding. It was flooding. And, you know, so they did cancel the tournament. But, for that semi, that was, you know, four pretty good players, you know, left in the tournament. It would have been a good fight to see who was going to come through there.
But yeah.
It was crazy.
Kind of crazy to think about, like, not playing out Indian Wells. You know, everyone talks about it. You said it before. You know, people look at it like the fifth major. You know, it's one of the, you know, most favored from the fans' perspective. And you know, it's right in our backyard. And it's fun to go out there, play golf, blah, blah, blah. To think of them just being like, yep, we're going to call it. We're moving on to Miami, right. But we're not going to finish it, you know?
Here's an interesting thought, Brad. I mean, you just brought it up. It could be a fifth major. You know, you think they'd ever think about putting a roof on there? I don't think they'd ever need it. But
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Nah, no, I don't think so. I think now.
I think that would take away from it, don't you?
Yeah.
Take away from the whole atmosphere.
Right. It's like nice, the sunsets, and you see the mountains with the snow cap, you know, right there. And then I think they kind of now, with Miami being like, now that they got these like kind of two-week events, now, like, even if it happened, they kind of have a couple days here where, like, Monday, Tuesday, right. Wednesday, they could almost, like, really, if they had to, have the final or semifinal then. But I would have liked your chances. I looked up your head-to-head against those three gentlemen, and 22-3. So might have been another one for the old pile of tournaments. How many tournaments did you play in that didn't finish? You got this one, 1980.
I had a few. 1981,
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo was one, Indian Wells was one, one in Rotterdam. I played one in Rotterdam that was a bomb scare.
Oh yeah.
Where they had, they sent us on our way on that one. So yeah, a couple. Yeah, so
that's three more. You know, that's three more potential. So you're saying you could have one anywhere from 109 to 112, just if those tournaments would have been completed.
I'm good. I'm good on 109.
Nice.
I like hanging out right there. You know, if anybody comes and gets me, the good thing about that, and the way I think about it, is if somebody comes and gets me and passes me, at least I set a good mark for them.
Right.
You know, it wasn't you know, some little thing where, you know, they can just say, well, you know, I got to that with ease. I mean, whoever gets to that's going to have to work their ass off and try to pass it. And whether it sticks or it doesn't, I set a good mark. That's the best thing.
Well said. Speaking of Miami, did you see this story? I mean, a really sad story from one of our favorites here on Advantage Connors. Arena Sabalenka, her ex-boyfriend, passed away. Not sure exactly all the details. I don't want to go too deep into it, but, he fell or he committed suicide jumping off a balcony down in Miami. I don't really know much else about it. I've seen his ex-wife was on Twitter talking about, you know, that she didn't think he was suicidal, but like, who knows? You never know. You're never in someone's mind. But, Sabby is going to play. They've pushed her match back, I think, a day. Supposed to play it on Thursday. Going to do it tomorrow when this comes out Friday. I just wanted to ask you. I thought it'd be good to talk about it. Just what, you know, people were criticizing her. But I think when you have something bad happen in your life, sometimes the thing you know, most and best is what you find, like, solace in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, with all due respects, I mean, there's some things that people should keep their comments to themselves on. Because, you know, unless you're really, you know, in her shoes and know what she's going through and what her thoughts are and all that, you know, it's better to stay away. And because I know, you know, when, you know, back in the day when I was playing, you know, tennis was, you know, a good escape for me, you know, when going through a lot of things and, you know, a lot of happenings, to go out and it kind of gives you a mental break where it takes your mind away from, you know, from a lot of things that are happening away from the court. And, you know, even though that, you know, that is devastating, how she takes it, only she knows. That's a comment, you know, I mean, she would be criticized if she pulled out, or she's going to be criticized if she continues to play, you know, because that's just the way people are. But it's her choice. And it's how she tries to deal with it on her own, my thoughts, you know, go out to her, because I, you know, tennis is a tough enough game, you know, to go out and play against your opponent and to work and to train and to try to be, you know, as good as she is, and, you know, let alone with something, you know, outside the courts that, you know, as devastating as this to have on your mind too. So, you know, I hope whatever decision she makes is the right one for her.
Yeah, definitely. It's just a sad story. She'll play Paula Badosa, who might be the best player for her to play. They're like best friends, you know, on social media. Their buddies always goofing around, and maybe that's a good thing for her to see a familiar face. And, you know, either way, it's going to be emotional for her, and just good to see her out there playing, and, you know, wish the best for her and everybody involved.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well said.
Yeah. So,
Halep coming back and playing.
Oh, yeah. Good call. She did. She came back, lost a tough three-setter. Who did she play? Hold on. I should know that.
Yeah,
she beat. Oh, she beat. She played Badosa. She played. That's who Badosa beat, was Halep. So that was a good segue that I whiffed on there. Could have had it, missed it.
that's okay. I'm on top of it.
So nice, Dad. Good call, Pops. Good call.
That was a good call. It's going to be interesting for her. I mean, she was away a long time. We talk about this all the time, Brett. She was away and missed those matches. I think once she gets back into it, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, her progression, mm-hmm. you know, to get her game back if she gets it back. I mean, you know, sometimes it just doesn't happen, but it's going to be interesting for me to see, you know, how it works out and where she plays and you know, how she starts treating these matches but hey, she's back, she's got that straightened out, you know, and hopefully, you know, she can, you know, get that off her mind too, and get back to playing tennis.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, she came out the box well. Won that first set 6-1, then played a pretty competitive second set, lost it 6-4, and then 6-3 in the third. So I think it's just one of those things, like we'd always say, match play. It's like cliche, you know. She just needs, you know, more matches, and you know, after this, they head to the clay, which I think, you know, she's always loved playing on the clay, and you know, she'll get probably more match play there because the, you know, points are longer and the play is longer, and that'll probably benefit her in just getting back into you know, match shape.
The best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. So don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And also, Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. That's according to an Indeed recent survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is everything's in one spot. I know I always say this, but it's true. They have everything you need if you need to hire good people fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. So join the 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And here's my favorite part, guys. Listeners of this show, Advantage Connors, get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job more visibility at Indeed.com/Connors. That's right. Just go to Indeed.com/Connors right now and support our show, Advantage Connors, by saying you heard it here. It really helps us out. Indeed.com/Connors. Of course, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide.
So.
Exactly. We got one big topic we want to talk about.
Here's the story I've been wanting to get to and researching all day. I'm not the biggest baseball guy. I don't follow it as much as I did when I was a kid. But this, I think the last story we might have talked about baseball might have included this guy. Did you see the story about Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter?
I did. I did see that.
I'm sure everybody out there knows, but Shohei Ohtani's interpreter supposedly, the story now is he supposedly stole $4.5 million to pay off gambling debts to a bookie here in Orange County, California, that has been caught up in.
First of all, let's tell our listeners, if they don't know who Ohtani is.
Right, Ohtani's just signed a $700 million deal with the LA Dodgers. He's been playing with the Angels his whole MLB career, comes over to the Dodgers, signing the huge deal. So he's got a lot of bread and might like to gamble. I don't know exactly, allegedly. But the story...
I saw the story, Brett, and you know, right away, you know, it brings in baseball and gambling, and the first person I think about going back, and he was even on our podcast, is Pete Rose,
right?
I'm sure he's following that too, but it's going to be an interesting story because and you said it, if it's the interpreter and he's paying off the debts for the interpreter, to the bookie, and he sent it there, and he signed the check and sent the check. There's a lot of intrigue that's going to be coming out of this, I think, don't you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's either one of two things: either he's paying off his interpreter's gambling debts, or he's gambling. And that's what that money's going to, right? It's either one of those two things. Right now, the story they're trying to say is that this guy stole the money. Somehow he went onto Shohei's computer, knows all of his routing and wire transfers. And, you can't send like $10,000 in a bank on a transfer sometimes without getting questions from the bank. So to send multiple $500,000 transfers to someone you probably never had maybe an exchange before, but seems a little fishy. Also, the salary of the interpreter is around $300,000. They've said between $300,000 and $400,000, $500,000, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. What bookie gives you a line of credit that's around 15 times your yearly salary before taxes.
Right. Well, yikes.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of things that are going to happen there, you know, whether it's in Major League Baseball or, you know, even outside of that, you know, with, you know, people looking into the bookie
It seems like the MLB wants it to just go away. They've said that they're not going to investigate it.
I would think so.
But the reason we know about this is probably because the bookie spoke. The bookie's trying to lessen his, you know, his time in jail or whatever the fine is going to be, right? So then he gives up the interpreter, and then and now we know about Ohtani because that's where the money came from. He doesn't have that kind of money, you know. And then what's he betting? Like, how much is he said he only bet on soccer, NFL, NBA, and college football?
Obviously,
only right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh my.
Right. And
no tennis involved there?
I guess no tennis. No live betting, overnight tennis with us on TAD. That's a bummer. But yeah, it seems weird because, you know, no one's gonna give you that much credit. Yeah. Right. And then what kind of friend? I mean, supposedly they're best friends. They do everything together. You know, he's an interpreter. I guess Ohtani doesn't speak great English. So, you know, he literally goes out to the mound with them when they do, you know, pitcher changes and talks about, you know, scouting reports and all that stuff. So I don't know. Supposedly the rules on different sports are different. Like they all are, you can't bet on this sport, you know, like baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some sports allow you to bet on other sports, you know, I guess. Right. But either way, this happened in California. It hasn't been legalized in California yet. So it's still like a crime technically, right? And the reason he does it with the private bookie instead of like trying to do it on an app is because, you know, if you win big on an app, that gets taxed. With a private bookie, it doesn't get taxed, right?
Right. Right.
So,
well, I guess, you know, feeling that, you know, he just signed a $700 million contract, but it's amazing, you know, the interest. And, you know, we talk about this all the time because, you know, we do talk about gambling and, you know, this is just our opinion. This is what's the line they use? This is for
entertainment purposes only.
Entertainment purposes only. Yeah, exactly.
Right. This is all just alleging and everything, but it just seems odd when you try and add it up from a like. You
yeah,
know.
But it's amazing. You know, gambling has become. You know, we had Las Vegas and we had Atlantic City, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, which was amazing, but you know,
normalized now, right?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden riverboats came along. So it made it more accessible to, you know, a lot of people who couldn't get on a plane and go to Atlantic City or Las Vegas. And then, you know, now, I mean, you know, with, you know, all the betting sites and everything else, you know, the ease at which you can, you know, get involved in, you know, and you just said it, you just named all the sports and gamble on anything and everything.
Right.
You know, you can gamble on, you know, how many people are going to vote for the next president if you want to. I mean, it's just crazy, you know, that, you know, what you can do now and how it can, you know, absorb you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really, you know, suck you into, you know, to want to be a part of it. And, you know, and I know, Brett, it's addicting. You know, you win one, you win two, you win three. Now all of a sudden you say, well, you know, shit, this is easy. You know, there's nothing like it. Once you think that, you're done.
Three. You can win three in a row? What?
Yeah.
What is this?
I gave him the benefit of the doubt.
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing. And, you know, live betting you can do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit hypocrisy, right? With the culture and like literally there's, you know, sponsors everywhere on every wall and, you know, major, all the sports benefit from gambling, but then they don't want anyone to do it. They don't want to have any negative ramifications from something that they're all like bathing in. They're just like, yeah, more money, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, exactly. It's just, I mean, but you can't do it. Like it just, I don't know. It's something weird. I think MLB doesn't want to find anything. That's why they're like, we're not investigating. Like you're going to have to like twist their arm to investigate. So I think it's going to have to come from like the FBI or whatever is going on with the bookmaker, you know, it's going to come from that side. And then the original story was that they put out the interpreter in front to do a 90-minute interview yesterday. They're in Korea right now. They're flying home maybe right now. but they were playing over there against the Padres, right? And after they switched the story and said he was stealing, he stole it from them. Yesterday, you can see Ohtani and the interpreter like hanging out. They're like laughing and hanging out in the dugout before he was like officially like let go. So if someone stole like $5 million from you, would you be like hanging and giggling and laughing with them? You know?
That's where you don't know what's inside somebody's mind and what they're thinking, you know, and the facts of it all. I mean, it's going to be an interesting story to follow because
definitely
because it does involve baseball.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
You know, and then the first thing you think about is Pete Rose.
Right.
And then, with a lot of other things that have happened.
The Astros.
You know, that the Astros, exactly. It's just what I was thinking that, what was that? That was in the World Series, I think.
Oh, it was just all the, like, remember, they were stealing the signs. They were banging on the trash cans and, like, doing all that weird trash can shit. Maybe a buzzer. We never really found out exactly all the details, but they never really penalized those guys. You know, nothing really happened. Baseball is like the best at not penalizing. Like they love the steroid era. It did so much good to bring us back after the strike. And then like, oh, I guess we'll have to do it. We'll wait till towards the end of all these guys' career when we can't make money off their backs. And then we'll start to like, you know, maybe do stuff.
Right. Well,
but
it's going to be an interesting story to follow. And to see, exactly where it goes or if it goes anywhere.
Right.
It's just squashed and it kind of goes away.
That's what they want. But, he doesn't have to say anything, you know, like he can like go Fifth Amendment and just, you know, get a lawyer and lawyer himself up. But the thing that's weird to me is they switched the story. You know, like it went from, hey, this guy's going to give an interview talking about this for 90 minutes. And he says, hey, he paid it for me. It was a gambling debt I did. And then a day later, it becomes, you know, Ohtani's people get a hold of it and his lawyers. And then now it's a theft. So now, like, if you're going to stick to that story, now it kind of has to bring more eyeballs because they have to investigate it.
Right.
You know, they have, if $5 million gets stolen, that's like wire fraud, that's embezzlement, that's theft. That's like all these things. He's using his computer. Is that, using his
identity.
Theft? Yeah. Is he like using his identity? Yeah. Is that identity theft? Blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I mean, if the guy bet on baseball, because that's the thing, this dude is sitting in there in the locker room. Talk about the ultimate fly on the wall. Like you'd love to have a guy like this if you're a bookie on your payroll, you know, because that's what happens too. Guys get put into debt. And if they don't have the money or don't want to pay, then they do other things maybe, right? Allegedly.
Right.
You know, to pay off that debt. And that might be, hey, this pitcher's arm sore or this guy's on a pitch count, but no one knows yet, you know, get on it before the line moves, you know, stuff like that.
That's, there's a lot of roads this could take, I think, don't you? I mean, to get to the single lane where we find out exactly what's really going on or what's happening, if it ever does.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if the dude bet on baseball, you know, like if it's all about if Ohtani bet, if this is really just what we say it is and he's a nice guy paying off a $5 million gambling debt for his best buddy, then that somehow is still a little weird too, right? I think that's breaking a law, I think, to do that. But
you want to be friends with him?
Right. Can he be my buddy?
Yeah. Holy cow.
But or he could be betting himself. Like what do you always say? Like you would never, if you're the athlete or the person who's at risk of getting found out, you wouldn't make the bet. You would have a person make the bet for you. You know, like that's what you would do. And this like kind of looks a little bit like that, just because if it was for 50 grand, you know, 50 or $100,000, you know, that's a ton of money to lose, but it seems a little bit more in the ballpark of his name's I Pay Mizuhara. His first name is I Pay. Shohei Pay.
Oh my God.
But yeah, man, I don't know. I just,
we got to stay on that. We got to stay on it because, I got a feeling that, especially with baseball season just starting, just getting underway with those two games over in Korea. And,
right.
And, you know, things getting wound up. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes.
Yep. I don't think it'll be the last time we talk about it. And baseball, like, you know, all publicity is not good, you know, maybe in this situation. We never talk about baseball. The last time we talked about baseball was when he signed the $700 million.
Right.
Now we're talking about it where he's shipping, you know, $4.5 million. Everyone's like, that's nothing in his salary. It's like, hey, that's close to a percent, or like, you know, three quarters of a percent or whatever you want to say. That's still like a chunk of money. You know, $5 million is $5 million. You have to make $8 or $9 million to make keep $5 million. So, that's a lot of bad bets. That's brutal, bro.
I can identify with that.
Right. All right. Let's move on to a couple questions. I found a couple questions that I thought you might like. Scott asks, excluding the U.S. Open, Jimmy, I'd like to know which tournament was the hardest on your sneakers due to either the playing surface or the playing conditions. So what tournament made you go through the most pair of sneakers? Because you've always, like, famously, you know, like, you would rip through shoes. I remember when I was a kid, I'd see new shoes, and I'd always be like, why more new shoes, Daddy? You know, and it's like, because, like, my toes are popping through them after, like, a match and a half or something, you know?
Well, I mean, basically back then, you know, the hard, you know, I like playing on the hard courts, and a lot of the tournaments in the States were hard courts. And also the indoor courts were played on a, you know, very thin. It was called Supreme Courts. And so that, you know, kind of took its toll also. But, you know, the hard courts, especially like outside of the U.S. Open and, you know, but I liked the feel. A lot of guys, didn't like the feel of the fresh shoe. You know, they wanted to practice in it or play in it, you know, and get the feel of it before they went into their matches. I like the fresh shoe and the way it felt and the way it fit, you know, at the time. And you know, that's why, you know, over the course of, you know, some 2 out of 3, but 3 out of 5 for sure, you know, I might change my shoes 2-3 times because I like that, that fresh feel. But, you know, you got to remember that back then the shoes were different. I mean, it was a sole with a piece of leather just flipped over the top, and that was your shoe. So it wasn't, you know, it didn't have all the stability and, you know, all the, you know, the good things that the shoes are supposed to have nowadays that, you know, that help protect you. It was just, you know, a sole with leather over it. And, and, you know, so it, you know, and also the way that I moved my feet, you know, my feet never stopped moving. And, you know, I mean, you could, you know, and the shoes, the squeaks and everything, it's almost like a tire on a car. You know, that's running on the road. I mean, you know, my sneakers are on that court and squeaking and tearing up that rubber, you know, point after point after ball. And you know, you go through that in a hurry.
Right.
You know, but I think mostly, you know, it was the hard courts and also, you know, my footwork that, you know, kind of went through them quick. But, yeah, I like the feel of the fresh shoe. It was, you know, it just kind of, you know, fit. I wore 2 pairs of socks. I wore a cotton sock underneath my, you know, my oversock, which at the time I was wearing hang 10 socks, which I still wish I could find some of those old socks. I love those. But it just, you know, it just fits so well. And yeah.
Nice.
But the fresh feeling was the best.
That's interesting because I feel like most people think, like when I get new running shoes and I go for a run, I usually will get like a blister the first 2 or 3 times maybe I run in them. You know, you have to like break them in. It's interesting to hear that you like the fresh. Would you have like orthotics as the technology got a little better and like put like move the orthotic from the old shoe to the new shoe?
I didn't have orthotics. I had a different kind of liner that I put in the shoe. I took the original liner that was in there. I took that out and I had a different kind of liner that I put in there that was a little softer. And also had a little bit of a lift because I liked the lift in the back because it made me, you know, almost stay on my toes. And that's why, I mean, when my shoes went bald from playing, it was always on the toe part, you know, and then I also had a habit where I stubbed my toe.
Right.
When I walked. So that helped. You know, go through the shoes a little bit, but
and you were doing that because you wanted to feel your toes all the way at the end.
How do you know all that? You're right. Exactly. And so I might as well just go through the whole thing. I have 1 foot bigger than the other. So I'm a half a size larger on the one side. And
which side?
And so my right side.
Hmm.
That's the toe that I stubbed the most, you know, and I liked that, you know, that feeling of feeling that my whole foot was in the shoe. So you're right. You know, once my toes hit, you know, the end of the shoe, that's when it felt the most comfortable. So
nice.
Yeah, there you go.
Good
that's
stuff.
That's the truth.
I like it.
And I'll swear by it.
I have here's another good question. I think you'll like this one. I didn't see this story, but I Googled it. Now I see it. So Gil Dillon says, Jimmy, this week the new Bond was almost announced. And I looked it up, and the guy's name is Aaron Taylor Johnson. Don't know much about him, but that's his name. I know you knew the original quite well. He played a lot with Bjorn and Nasty as well at charity events. Do you have any stories about Sean you can share? Growing up with my friends would always comment about how my two heroes were cons, you and Sean.
That's some pretty good company to put me in, and I thank you for that. I mean, you know, we, your mom and I were lucky to be friends with Sean and Micheline and spend some time with them. And I remember one time when we lived in San Ynez, which is where you were raised. You and your sister were raised here, brother, in California. There was a luncheon, and we were invited, and Sean and Micheline were there, and you know, it's always good to see him and spend some time with him with a lot of our friends out there. But I got up from the table and I said, you know, I'd like to stay a little longer. I said, but I got to go practice. I've got some tennis to play, so I need to go practice. So I get up and leave, and I'm home, and I'm waiting for my game to come over. And all of a sudden the car comes up, and it's Sean who wanted to come and watch me practice. And hit some balls, and you know, we got to spend a little time, and also when he came in, he brought in a putter, because I told him that you were in the golf, and that we were probably going to go play some golf too on that day. Mm-hmm. and he brings his putter and gave you his putter.
That's right.
And I still have that putter. I still have it.
Right.
It's in my bag in the closet of all the clubs that I try on a daily basis, which is an overabundance.
That's a lot.
Way too many.
That's pretty
cool.
I remember that day too. He came to the house and hung out. I remember meeting him and shaking his hand. And he seemed like one of those people who had such a big presence, you know, like he seemed like larger than life with his voice and his accent.
And he was Brett. He could talk to you about anything. And, you know, he wanted to come when he drove up, I said, you know, I'm just practicing. He says, I wanted to watch you practice. His voice and, you know, the way he carried himself he was fun to hang around, and to hear a lot of his stories and you know what he had, you know, done through the course of his life and how he got involved in Bond and, you know, in his golf game and spending the time with him was a lot of fun.
I feel like the putter was like one of those two-way putters where you could be lefty or righty. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, and it's like kind of goldish. Yeah. Is it goldish?
I'll have it on your bed when you come up to see us.
How about you take a picture and we'll put it out this weekend, and then when I come up, I'll putt with it.
Okay, all right.
I remember that day. That was pretty cool. Because I grew up kind of when I was young, Roger Moore was quote unquote James Bond, you know, in all the movies that I was watching. But then when I went back and watched from the very beginning, because we had all the tapes. Remember when we had that great cabinet full of all our tapes? I miss those days, the old tape cabinet.
And indeed.
I went back and watched, and you can say, oh, I see. You know, Roger Moore's cool and all, but like this is what it was like meant to be, kind of. Like this is the dude, you know?
Yep, Well, he set the precedent.
Yeah,
he set the precedent, and you know, and geez, I remember, you know, back in the day going to see, you know, the first Bonds that that came out, and you'd walk out of the theater, and you couldn't wait for the next one. They say in the next Bond, Live and Let Die or whatever, we'll be out in two years. Geez, you know, you started marking your calendar from the day because right. it was just, you know, they just sucked you in, and you know, they were so good and so much action, so much excitement. It was some really good series.
It's kind of weird. Didn't they kill him in the last one? Like, isn't he dead technically, Bond?
Well,
the character. Yeah, I guess he's back, baby.
that's what they say.
Yeah,
that's what they say. But you know, you never know. Bond is. You know, he's got out of a lot of bad situations. Maybe you'll get out of this one, too.
There's an account on Instagram, and, like, I don't know if it's only what they do, but I always see it, and it's, like, it's just all it is clipping off all the funny, like, maybe you know how in the beginning of Bond, there'd always be, like, a love scene and, like, a chase scene, and that, like, would kind of set the tone, and then they would get into, like, whatever they're doing for that mission and everything. It almost just clips off all kind of the absurdity of some of the Bond movies, like the stuff that he's doing, where like one time he skis down this mountain and all these guys are chasing him. There's a helicopter and, you know, he's like turning around and machine gunning people and doing backflips. And, you know, he takes out the helicopter and he takes out all the people, you know, and he parachutes down. It's just,
I know.
It's so fun, dude.
Yeah. But it was just good action. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, for me, I mean, I usually you walk into that's just the way I am. You know, I get in there and, you know, if I'm 10 minutes late or whatever, I'm still going to have fun. But you had to get there with the Bond to see that.
Right.
To be a part of that, which, you know, which kind of set the precedent for, you know, for the whole show. So
nice.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's fun. All right, I think that's all we got, Pops. I think Bella
it's a
and
short
I.
One tonight.
Yeah, shorty. Can you under an hour is good for us.
Yeah, not so bad. I got to go back to our listeners one more time, Brett, and just tell them, you know, a shout out to them and thanks, because you know we have fun doing this. You know, I love being on this and talking with you and, you know, talking about a lot of things. And you know, I like it better when we're in person, because you know, it seems to flow a little bit better. But our listeners are amazing. You know, they send in great questions, and just, you know, for them to stick with us, because you know we're over 4 years now, and mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them have stuck with us from the very beginning. And I'm just you know, I'm not being sentimental, but I'm just I just want you to know, you know, that we appreciate you and keep listening.
Definitely. We appreciate you. I've seen we've gotten some good reviews recently on our Apple Podcast page. If you're out there, give us a 5-star review. If you like us, I guess. If you don't, then just don't do anything, you know. Only a positive review, please.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
And then did you notice that we made it through the week after one of the topics we talked about last week? I was a little nervous because we didn't actually talk about this on the pod. It kind of snuck through and I didn't see it until after the podcast. But did you see what happened to the Boeing whistleblower after we talked about Boeing last week? His name's John Barnett. He was found suicided, whichever one you want to say, but pretty convenient for Boeing that this dude ends up dead in his car at a Holiday Inn that he was staying at. He was supposedly set to testify for a second day in a deposition, right? Wow. And he was supposed to go home. Man. He was supposed to go home. And the Boeing lawyers asked him, said he needed to stay and do one more day. And in that day, he ends up suicided in his car in the parking lot. Something smells kind of fishy, allegedly. But I'm just proud of us. Like, we made it through the week after we dipped our toe into such a controversial topic as safe air flight. And I wanted to say congratulations.
Well I'm, you know, I just hope they, you know, they find out what's going on with these, you know, with a lot of the airplanes now and get it straightened out. You know, it's, you know, flying is, you know, I'm kind of a nervous flyer anyway. And having some things like this, you know, on my mind also just makes it, you know, for a little more tension, So, you know, I hope things get straightened out, and, you know, for the safety of, you know, of all those out there that that travel on a daily basis or whenever, that they get things straightened out. And I hope so, in a hurry.
Yeah. I mean, the slow creep of my flight in a month. I haven't been traveling too much the last couple of months, but we're going on a flight and it's on a Boeing plane. So like that, it's like all fun right now, but it's like the next 4 weeks get closer, my anxiety level will probably go up. I mean, it's definitely sad. This guy was like, seemed like a really good dude. I didn't know much about him. And then I watched, there's a documentary on Netflix about like what happened with Boeing back before, you know, after, you know, when they first grounded the airplanes, the Supermax. And right. He's on there. He's like one of the main dudes on this documentary talking about all the like stuff and them not doing the right safety stuff. And he's, you know, he's kind of this like great witness to all of it. And now he's gone. And it's, you know, I hope that doesn't affect them cleaning up their act, because, yeah, we need safe plans.
We better be watching out for that too.
Okay.
and seeing where that goes. But, you know, hopefully they're in the right direction on, you know, fixing all that, because, you know, if you look at, you know, the amount of flights on a daily basis, you know, not only just in the United States, but around the world, and the amount of people that are traveling, you know, they've got enough on their mind, you know, and hopefully, you know, that that safety part of it is kind of, you know, looked out for, you know, for all the passengers. Yep, but we'll be following it.
Yeah.
Might as well.
I mean, that's what happens when the headline on one of the newspapers was Boeing faces tricky balance between safety and financial performance. Like they felt like that was okay to go to print with, you know, like, oh, like, do we like worry about people dying or like just get like more money? You know, it's a delicate balance, tricky balance.
Oh boy.
Jesus.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's why I'm very happy sitting right here in my den.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Yeah. I'm starting to get that a little bit more and more the older I get.
Yeah, I think so. But in the meantime, you can follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, and you can follow Brett at Brett_Connors on Twitter, at ADV Connors, which is our podcast, and my Facebook.
Yep.
And Golden Doodle Isabella.
Gold Dude Isabella on Instagram. Yep. You're doing the intro. You're doing the outro. Like, well, yeah, you're doing everything.
Giving you a little break this time.
I like
giving
it.
You a little break.
I like it. Take us out.
So, but don't get used to it. I like your introductions better. You're doing good. I love you, son. Always good being with you. And to all our listeners, glad you're sticking with us and sending questions. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.